All right, guys and girls, this is a Thunder Pop Extra.
Coming up on Thunder Pop.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing our Mystery Sinus Theater 3000 superfan in via Skype, as she is way, 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 way across the street. And we would not want her to have to leave her couch. Now, truthfully, she's a good friend, and she's a few miles away. But with the current state of Austin, Texas traffic, her drive to Thunder Pop Studio would have taken several days. I'm sad to say.
So in the meantime, I can stay somewhere in time and space.
A good friend, Erica Long. Hi, Erica. How you doing?
Hi, Steven. I'm great. Thank you.
She has her own podcast as well. It's called Magic Lantern Podcast. She's a host with Cole Roulain. And our show, she says, is devoted to sharing and endearing cinematic memories. Now, my favorite Magic Lantern, it's a gift. W.C. Fields.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Open the door for Mr. Merkel.
What?
Open the door for Mr. Merkel, the blind man.
How about my kumquats?
What'd
you
say?
Wait! And you're 8 episodes in, correct?
Yes, we're 8 episodes in. We're just about to record the 9th, which I'll give you everybody a little spoiler alert. It will be The Thing from Another World.
So we'll see this go up on the iTunes. Is it about a week away?
Yes, about a week away. And you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever podcast catcher you have. Or you can find us at our website, magiclanternpodcast.com.
Very good. Now, we just started this podcast. So far, if we're keeping score, I've had, and I'm glad you're here, I'm going to tell you why. We've had a guy who's 40 years old who has admitted that he keeps a Darth Vader helmet next to his bedside and that he masturbates in it.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
I know that gentleman, and none of that comes as a surprise.
Yeah. We've also had to put dogs in the backyard to keep them from barking through the entire podcast. And then I had allergies on one of them, and so I had to keep clearing my throat, and that one took me about a week to edit out all the...
It sounds like it's off to an auspicious start.
Yeah, so we really needed somebody on to kind of, raise the bar a little bit and help us out with that a little bit for a few minutes. So, Joel Hodgkin, am I saying his name right? Joel Hodgkin?
It's Joel Hodgson.
Hodgkin.
Hodgson.
Hodgkin.
Learn to read.
I'm gonna say Joel H.
Just call him Joel. Everybody knows who it is.
Yeah, everybody knows. Joel. The founder of Mystery Science Theater 3000. One time, Tom Snyder said, buy the winning ticket and tell the boss to stick it, in reference to the lottery. Did Joel, at some point, did he not buy his winning ticket? Or is this really just his passion and he just wants to bring it back to the fans?
I 100% believe, Stephen, that it is the latter. Joel has always done this for the love of the thing. He has... His genuine, warm, inclusive spirit has come across from the very first episode through his entire 5 years on the show. And let me step back for a second and say that I have been watching Mystery Science Theater 3000 since about 1994 or 5. Now, the show actually debuted in 1988. Okay. So I came to it late in the party, and I only got to see rebroadcasts of the shows. And then in the later 90s, when the show moved from Comedy Central over to Sci-Fi, I have a wonderful aunt who was kind enough to record episodes on VHS and send them to me. And that was my all-time favorite mail package to get
every
couple of weeks. So I watched those. Yeah, absolutely. And I watched those Mike episodes over and over and over again for years. And I can say, this is my dark secret. That's not a secret, and nor is it dark, that I have watched Mystery Science Theater 3000 every night for some period of time since the later 90s.
Wow. And see, and I don't know how that's possible, because I know you have a block out time for Golden Girls, the Andy Griffith Show, and Murder, She Wrote as well.
You know, surprisingly, there's still room for a few minutes at least right before bed.
Okay, yeah, I got it. Yeah, you got always time for that. Now, we have something, there's some new developments on this that you're going to drop that I'm very excited about. That's going to be great. Now, so let me ask you this. The Mystery Science Theater 3000, you were who I found this news out that it was going to Kickstarter from Facebook. And so as soon as I read it, I was really excited, and I posted, you know, on the Thunderpop page. You know, I got in such a hurry, and so I posted Mystery Science Theater 2K. So I was actually starting a new Kickstarter for the prequel series that had never been made on the Mystery Science Theater.
Maybe you and I can be on that one. I'll be one of the robots, and you can be the host.
It's before they get there. The mission. It's just the robots.
So let's see if Steve Guttenberg available or
he's available. He's available.
Okay.
Very available. He's waiting and waiting and waiting for that 3 Men and a Baby, 3 Men and a Lady sequel. That they had promised a while back, that Tom Selleck and Ted Danson had been talking about for quite a while. That's probably a Kickstarter soon.
Probably. Now, and to go back to your original question, I really don't think Joel or anyone involved in this is doing it for some sort of big cash grab. And what's wonderful about the Kickstarter campaign and Joel is that he has laid out very clearly where every single dollar is going.
Yeah.
And none of it's in some slush fund that goes directly into his pocket. It's just, that's just not the way that he has ever approached anything, or anyone involved in the show has approached anything. And so I was one of the now over 16,000 backers in this last few days of just since this campaign has opened up. And so I gave my money right away because I clearly love the show, love all the iterations of it, love the space that it occupies. I think there's room for so many things like this in the spirit that it has, which is a true lover of film and pop culture and smart comedy. So I think there's so much room for all of this stuff. And I really hope that he gets to his campaign goal, which it seems like there's no stopping it. It's already over $1.8 million for this initial $2 million goal.
Yeah. And we were talking about that. I have a band here called Evil Flying Chickens. There was my
panel. I saw that on your page.
Yeah, it was my panel. And they, we talked about that, the money. And at first, that was the first thing that caught me. I was astonished at first how much it cost to produce 15 episodes. Is that also some budget, you think, for the promotion of it? Or do you think it actually goes into the actual expense? Am I just naive how expensive things have gotten when it comes to production?
You know, maybe a little bit of both of those things. And if you go on the Kickstarter campaign, so bringbackmst3k.com, if you go to that campaign, you can see that breakdown. And without pulling it up, I'm kind of going off the top of my head, so forgive me for getting this wrong. But the first $2 million is for the three-episode commitment. Mm-hmm. And then, so he was pretty clear that the biggest chunk of money goes to the rights for the films, and to pay everyone involved. And he and a lot of people associated with the show have always said, you know, they didn't get rich off of this, and most of them have never received any sort of residuals from the show. So he is really trying to rectify that situation and pay everyone equitably.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's attracting more talent, and so that's a big chunk of money. And the kind of initial get off the ground is the biggest amount of money, and then the more shows that they're able to do. So the next stretch goal is 5 episodes,
mm-hmm.
and then I believe 12 episodes. And so when you get to that point, those overall costs go down per episode.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it costs several $100,000 per episode.
Yeah. Now, did you know this? What is the first national TV appearance that Joel's first national TV appearance? Trivia question for you.
I'm going to guess, I can't possibly be Star Search. I don't know.
Well, I only wish it was
Evening
Star Search.
At the Improv with Bud Collins. What was his name? Not Bud Collins, Bud whatever. He had that monocle. It was on A&E. What? Tell me the answer.
Well, you know, you're not too far off. He went after school, you know, out. He was, you know, he's from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But after, then he relocated to Minneapolis, which turned out to be a good move for him. Mm-hmm. Went to school. After school, he went out to L.A. to pursue a stand-up comedy career.
Our next performer isn't just a comic, and he isn't just a magician. He's not sure exactly what he is. Anyway, he started out in Minneapolis, and he's played clubs in the Twin Cities, Chicago, and L.A. But tonight could be his big break. Please welcome comic, magician, spy, Joel Hodgson.
Joel Hodgson, age 23, white human, 8th annual young comedian special, starting now. like John Candy told you, I just moved out here from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And these are some pictures of my trip.
And his first net, he was discovered by the producer of Late Night with David Letterman.
Okay, great.
So he started off, and then he made it onto Saturday Night Live. He went on and did some a PBS comedy special. He worked with some big names too. I know Seinfeld was in there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And he left that at a point in time where, and this kind of adds to, and contributes to your point about how he's never been kind of a guy where it was money first.
Yeah.
It's always been about the, you know, the creation, mm-hmm. and the fans and putting something out there that pleases them and makes them happy, makes him happy. But he left a very prominent, successful stand-up comedy career where he was being sought out. And it was at a time where it was a peak time in golden age kind of for stand-up comedy. If you think about that mid to late 80s, how big that was in the world of stand-up comedy and how many careers were made on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
He left all that because he wanted to go back to Minneapolis. He took a sabbatical from entertainment. And then later, then Mystery Science Theater Course 3000 spawned when he goes home and kind of gets grounded again.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us can relate to that. And I think why the show has been so enduring is that he's never talked down to the audience. We're all in on the joke together, I think. And mm-hmm. we can just relate to every person involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not slick, you know, it's not smarmy, though some people could argue sometimes maybe the jokes, depending on your host preference, but I love it.
Greetings, my friend.
What up, Chris?
We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Whoa.
And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
But that's all in the
you
past.
You are interested in the unknown.
Now, you have a favorite, I know this is hard, do you have a favorite episode, favorite title?
It's actually not hard for me. I'm going to cheat a little bit. So the very first episode I ever saw was Pod People. And to mm-hmm. anyone who knows the show, Pod People is a wonderful choice for the uninitiated. And it's still one of the best episodes ever. It's not my favorite, though. My favorite actually is Mole People. And I was watching it last night with John Agar. It's from season 8.
That's my favorite. Yeah, I know that one very well.
Anyway, Nell Stone, your movie today is Mole People, starring the stunningly annoying John Agar. Enjoy.
So the Earth has neutral weather.
Bingo.
It's amazing how much we know about the surface of our globe.
Your jacket,
the last
professor.
100 years, men have progressively studied this. What's inside this?
This thing with
globe?
The thing in the AP.
What is there beneath our feet? All down through time, religions of the past have postulated the existence of this inner
downness
habitable world. Very curious and strange theories about what goes on in the center of our planet.
Annoying theories.
This is a very famous and interesting and odd one. Inside our world, like onion layers,
there's a thin coating of butter.
There were globes within globes. The northwest edge of Siberia, you could go down through a hole and go successfully
down,
to these
down,
various
regions. Very nipple of the world.
Unfortunately, he was
I'm fading.
Thoroughly obsessed with this one around lecture.
Yeah. Just a quick to interject this for the audience, the three of you that are listening. Anyway, if you hear squeal in the background, me and my wife have not kidnapped a lady in the other room. It's our dog squealing from the hallway, in case you hear it. Don't call the authorities on us. All right. So
whenever they listen to the episode a year from now?
A year from now, you'll be kind of, well, at that point, yeah. It's a totally different saga at that point.
Yeah, give it away. Yeah, give it away. My neighbor got big testicles because we see this dude every day. We eat ribs with this dude. But we didn't have a clue that that girl was in that house. She said, please help me get out.
So tell me this, on the platform, we were talking about different platforms that they could see this getting relaunched. I know they've had a Hulu deal for a while. They've been running the shows on Hulu. Is that on Hulu Plus or is that on the actual free version of Hulu?
You know what? I only have Hulu Plus, so I'm not actually sure anymore.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of episodes for a while on Netflix and then switched over and really expanded it on Hulu, which is also where Riff Tracks is, too. So you can watch both of those things. You know, you may have a strong opinion about this, but you can actually see most of the episodes on YouTube.
Yeah.
As
no.
Well.
My opinion is to, yes, go watch it on YouTube.
I maybe this again is a cheat, but I go back to their first messages in the first several seasons, which was keep circulating the tapes.
Yeah.
Because they wanted people to see it. And if you can get to more episodes on YouTube, I'm say all for it.
Now we're talking about the new version. And I believe it's going to happen. I think they're going to make it happen.
I do, too. Oh, and actually, if I can add, too. So watch the episodes on YouTube and donate to the Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, so you got new news. We have not covered that. There's breaking news on this?
There is breaking news. So
breaking news up in this place.
Joel sends really helpful emails every day. And he just sent the latest update, day 4 update, and he also posted it to Facebook, so you can check this out. But he has announced who they believe the next host is going to be, so that's a pretty big deal.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and drum roll. It is Jonah Ray of the Nerdist podcast, also a comedian, writer.
Very familiar.
Yeah. So you can go into the campaign or follow it on Facebook or go to the website and see some clips and you could hear his voice on some things. Big deal.
Wow. Oh, that's a big deal.
Said with the launch of the campaign that it was always his intention to have MST3K be something along the lines of a Saturday Night Live, which is that it just keeps going and you change the cast But you keep the central idea in place. And so I could see that going on forever and ever and ever. So I'm not one of those that has a problem with the idea of new host or new bots or new mads. As long as the spirit is there and the people I loved writing for it are can come back and do some spots, I think it's great.
So I was talking with the guys a little bit ago, and they're off to the side vaping right now. But anyway, so talking to the guys about, you know, things have been rebooted, shows have been brought back, and some of them worked. Some of them worked on some levels. But then there were others where because of the time that had passed and then they come back, and the timing that worked at one point, especially in comedy, didn't work later. How do you feel about that? Do you think they'll have to tweak with this to work with the current audience? Or is it not for the current audience? It's for the audience that watched it. Is it for us, basically? It's not for, you know, like kids in high school right now.
I think that is a wonderful question. And I'm not sure I know the answer, but I definitely think about this. And so I'm of one mind that says, I think it's definitely going to go. You see the money raised so quickly from such diehard fans that there is at least an audience for it that will continue with it. And then, of course, it will be up to creating a quality show to make it last. You know, and I think back to, you can see the influences in different seasons from different writers. And a lot of the Joel episodes are very much, a lot of the jokes are Marx Brothers callbacks, W.C. Fields callbacks. And so people today, young people, I think would miss a lot of that. But if you want to create an informed audience, you don't talk down to them. And you come from the place and the things that you love. And I so much like that you said that you liked our It's a Gift episode of the podcast, because that stuff is as funnier today than it was almost 100 years ago.
You know why I think that is? And sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
But I think that great comedy, or, you know, in general, just the delivery of, you know, a performance, but especially in comedy, I think a lot of it is in the execution and the delivery. Like the you know, you look at some of these great comedians, it's not so much the material always as it is the way they delivered it. I mean, there's definitely writing involved there. You have to come up with some ideas that you're going to talk about, some things. But I mean, look at, you know, the stories are being told. And if those stories were not delivered the right way. And so, and then the other part of his presence with W.C. Fields, he just has, you know, going back to your episode, It's a Gift on the Magic Lantern, you know, W.C. Fields has a certain presence. And we've all had like a really funny uncle or an extremely funny cousin that could have probably been a comedian because they had this amazing storytelling and develop way they could just deliver. And anything would be funny. And then other times it's just the presence where the person in the room, Chevy Chase can just be in a room and he was hilarious just being in the room. Or Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell doesn't have to say anything, he just stare at you. And then so it's a presence there. This is a real interesting story about, this is on a side story about W.C. Fields. You know, he died fairly young because of his alcoholism. It's his girlfriend at the time. He's in a hospital or clinic or something of those, of that nature. And his favorite sound was the sound of rain, you know, rain hitting a rooftop. So they knew he was dying, didn't have much time left. She went outside and found a water hose, and this is love. She went outside and found a water hose and ran water over the roof so he could hear that sound one more time.
Yeah. And we tell that story on that episode too. So I hope.
Well, that's probably where I heard it.
It could be.
That's maybe where I heard the story.
I hope that inspires people to go find him. And, you know, a sub strata of the show is that it inspires me to go find these other movies too and explore other worlds. And, you know, going back to your thought, is it writing? Is it the story? Is it the presence? I think it's a little bit of all of those things. And with W.C. Fields in particular, he was the smartest guy in the room, and that came through. And I think Joel is incredibly smart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think that they were smart enough to make callbacks to other comedy that is wonderful and enduring, and not lend, though they are aficionados of pop culture, And there will be references that are that seem kind of dated or don't mean as much today, but they didn't rely on just topical, blah, 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 the person in the news. It's a lot more than that. And so I think that that kind of stuff lasts. So back to your question of who's the audience, I hope that younger people will find it and get excited about it. Because now, you know, we're of the age that we've got, that we went through the first run of the show. We're now old enough, though you and I personally don't have kids, we're old enough to have kids that we could introduce these shows to. And I, when you go on the Reddit AMAs for Joel or Mike or Kevin or Bill or anybody involved in it.
Oh, wait, wait. You said that we both do not have kids.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
Neither of us has kids.
That's pending. I got a letter in the mail and
okay.
We haven't opened it. It's been, no, just, I'm just totally, okay. I'm totally messing with you.
Barring any illegitimate kids that you fathered when you were on some sort of tour, you read about people coming up to those guys all the time and saying, yeah, and I brought my son, I brought my daughter, I've got them watching the show. So I think that there's a bigger audience for it.
Yeah, I agree. Where do you think this will run? Do you think this is something on demand, streaming? Do you think they might follow where they're at now with Hulu?
You know, I'm not sure, and I don't know that it's come up so far. At least I haven't read it in any of the updates. It seems like it would have a really solid run on Hulu or Netflix or something like that, especially you take, for example, with Bob and David that just came back on or just has come to Netflix. I think is doing really, really well. So
I bet,
it seems like those platforms would really make sense.
My hope is Netflix. I would love to see it on Netflix.
Yeah. Maybe they'll stick with Hulu, that home that they've had through, you know, the similar project of Riff Tracks and then through more expanded episodes through the Shout Factory.
So, I had two more things I want to ask you about. And I could talk to you about this all day, but and I know you could talk about it all day. But I have two more things, and you just hit upon the one, the Shout Factory. So this was a little bit confusing to me. The Shout Factory. They acquired the rights on Mystery Science Theater 3000 right before this Kickstarter kicked off.
Yeah.
Now, how did that work? Because wasn't that Joel's company? Would that have been Joel's production company that had the rights previous?
Now, I was trying to look into that a little bit before we started recording so I could have a better idea. Because forever and ever and ever, Joel was part of Best Brains. And I had assumed that it was basically... He and Jim Mallon, who was the executive producer for a number of seasons. So I thought that it was essentially the two of them. But then, you know, Joel parted from the show, and part of it he has attributed to some creative differences with Jim Mallon. Now, no one involved has ever really badmouthed anybody else. So, you know, there isn't...
No.
As far as you can find, there's no, you know, disgusting gossip or anything like that. But
yeah, it's no... There's no lawsuits or finger pointing.
Yes. So I took it as he either severed his involvement with Best Brains or had a smaller, you know, part of ownership in it, and that Jim Mallon, and I believe actually Paul Chaplin, who was a writer and a performer on the show for a long time, that it was then sort of the two of them that were essentially Best Brains, and that they controlled all the rights. And that's also why people didn't get residuals or, you know, didn't stay involved with it. And so also from what I understand is that the second that Shout Factory, after a number of years, I believe, of negotiations, closed that deal where they took over the rights, that's the second that Joel did the Kickstarter. So I'm assuming that Best Brains was controlling this and putting a kibosh on any kind of development, new shows, anything like that.
Yeah.
And once that changed over, Joel had been working with the Shout Factory to help this along and then go in this new direction.
So who's Riff Tracks?
Riff Tracks is Mike Nelson and now Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy. So they were the three people that took the show. Mike came on in season 5. And then Bill in the end of season 7 and season 8, and Kevin Murphy, who had been with the show from the pilot episode, They were the host and the two bots that then ended the series run. And so Mike got involved with Riff Tracks, and then Kevin was there, and then Bill came on almost right away too. So it's the three of them, and they do audio recordings of the riffs to movies, which mm-hmm. you can then download and play along with the copy that you have of that movie. Mm-hmm. And then they also do live shows.
Yeah, and you've been to some of the, I know you've been to some of the live ones.
I've been to almost all of them, and I have a ton of riff tracks, listen to new ones all the time. I love them all. As I loved Cinematic Titanic, which was Joel and Mary Jo, who was Pearl Forster, and Trace, who was Crow for a very, very, very long time, and many others involved. Frank, TV's Frank, was in it. That was specifically a live tour where they did a live riff of the film that was projected. And I went to that, and I have those episodes too, so love them all.
Where did riffing come from, that term?
Gosh, no clue. That's been around forever and ever and ever. That, you know, musical term, comedy term. I'd have to look that one up. I can. Let me see.
I'm super curious about that. And I had that thought before we even talked, and then I was going to look it up, and then I didn't.
Riff, in popular music and jazz, a short repeated phrase frequently played over changing chords or harmonies or used as a background to a solo improvisation.
Mm.
So it's been around forever.
Erica Long, along with Cole Rulane.
And he's my husband, by the way.
Yes. And I didn't know oh, there we go with the y'alls again. I'm trying to be less regional.
That's okay.
So, madame,
yes.
If I may.
Yes. Yes, sir.
I didn't know if you discussed that, if you just called yourself co-host and didn't really get into like your, you know. But anyway, yes. Also, her husband, and they put on these great film nights. I was going to say family nights, but it's like a family night, too.
It is.
Yeah. It's your film family and extended family. They've put on some great movie nights that I've enjoyed some of the screenings that they've put together.
The one coming up on Monday, you of all people should not miss it.
Yeah, and before we go, and absolutely, I saw that what you're doing is great, but it's not to the public, open to the public, like past whoever's on their Facebook group.
Right. If you get in our Facebook group, you can come, but otherwise,
because you never know when you say that you might be plugging it as if, oh yeah, we're of course. I mean, if the three people listen and hear that, they want to come by.
Yeah.
We'll just give them a code word. They have to give the code word when they come in.
If people are plugging into our matrix and have the transponder on and then find where my signal is coming from, maybe, but yeah.
And, yeah, then so be it. If they want to stand over kind of like in the alleyway and look over the fence and they can see the screen from there and want to watch it from there, that's fine. We'll hand a cookie over to them.
Would you want a cookie? Down on my face.
At some point.
But I really hope you come on Monday because you are going to love it.
Yes, I saw that. I'm going to be able to.
If not, I will watch this one with you whenever you want.
Okay, yeah, because this is one that's a subject topic. Well, go ahead and say what it is.
Yeah, this is prime for MST3K, and I also posted it on Riff Tracks too, to hopefully get them to it.
Have you done that before? Sent them an idea?
This was the first time that I'd done it, and they responded back. The movie is called Fateful Findings, and it is one of those must be seen to be believed, and then you won't be able to wash it out of your eyeball brains for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's a level of insanity that I have not seen in a very long time. And so I posted it to Riff Tracks, and they said, ask Neil, which is essentially the writer, director, producer, caterer, lighting designer, strip club enthusiast, whatever, the guy who has made this and made several other films. And the guy strikes me as having absolutely no sense of humor at all. So they're not going to be able to do this one, but I can always hope.
It sounds like when you were describing kind of the description there, sounded like the guest for next week on the show.
Oh god.
Did I book this guy?
Oh,
some.
Have you? You need to.
I'll look into that for sure. Again, Erica Long, The Magic Lantern.
It's magiclanternpodcast.com.
Podcast.com.
Yeah. Or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search The Magic Lantern.
And they have beautiful orange graphic for their logo.
Thanks.
I enjoy their work for sure. Tell Cole I said hi.
Sure will.
Hope to see you all. Hope to see you, madame.
I hope to see thee.
Or I could go to the Midwest version, Ewens. Hope to see Ewens in a week, less than a week.
Let me give you, and I didn't interrupt you because you were kind of on a roll, but the very, very first.
No, there's nobody on a roll today here.
Okay. Well, you can probably go back and re-record this, but.
I'm going to have a spring roll, but that's about the only roll that's happening here.
When you first said Mystery Science Theater, it sounded like Mystery Sinus.
Oh, yes.
I bet you probably had Mr. Sinus in your head, kind of. So
yeah, there is Master Pancake. We talked about the Master Pancake earlier, Alamo Draft House.
It was, yeah. Go.
So we're closing, but was that who intervened there? So they had to change the name, the Alamo Draft House.
It was Best Brains.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, that'd be there.
Yeah, they locked that shit down, and then so they had to change it up.
But it took a while because it ran as that in that name for a little bit.
Yeah, so I don't know if they have some sort of legal arm that, or had some sort of a legal arm that would routinely do checks, or I don't know, or somebody reported it to them.
Yeah, it was before the internet information was traveling faster.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get things past people for as long as you used to.
It's true.
With the internet and social media, things get back to people a lot faster.
Yeah,
I know because I try to steal tons of stuff, and every time I get busted within hours. Hey, have a great one. Once again, we thank Erica Long for being our first Skype.
It was an honor and a pleasure.
Hey, everyone. This was a Thunder Pop Extra. And of course, this is a Hit the Bricks production.